Okay, welcome.
My name is Divine.
I'm a resident. This is episode 203 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in this podcast, I'm going to be talking about a topic that, I don't know, for whatever bizarre reason, people tend to get this wrong like a lot on MDME exams, especially for Step 2 CK. So it's going to be like a somewhat limited coverage of leukemias and lymphomas, specifically for the USMLE Step 2 CK and Step 3 exams. So I'll just talk about some things that are high yield that people tend to, you know, kind of screw up on these tests. And to be perfectly honest with you, I think I'm going to set this up in a fairly unique way. And it will be how to specifically on MBME exams get questions correct that test leukemias and lymphomas, right? So the first big question, and so this should hopefully be kind of like a short podcast. So the first big question you want to ask yourself on MBME exams is, okay, Divine, how do leukemias classically present and how do lymphomas classically present? Here's the deal. The way a leukemia will likely present on your test is you will see a person that has a disproportionately elevated white blood cell count. It's not always true, but that is usually the case, right? But I will say even more cogent is like this thing where every other blood element will be low. So they will have like low hemoglobin, indicating that they have an anemia, and they will have low, like a low platelet count, indicating that they have a thrombocytopenia. So if you see either a disproportionately high white blood cell count, or you see a normal white blood cell count, but you notice that every other thing is low, the platelets are low, the hemoglobin is low, if you see that, you absolutely want to think about a leukemia on an MBM exam. Okay, now on the flip side, lymphomas, people that have lymphomas, the primary physical exam finding is almost always those people having some sort of lymphadenopathy. In fact, they are for sure going to have lymphadenopathy on the exam. And usually people that have lymphomas tend to not have CBC abnormalities, right? So their white count may be normal, their hemoglobin may be normal, their platelet count may be normal. That's something you absolutely need to keep at the back of your mind for tests, okay? Usually, they do not have CBC abnormalities, and the primary presentation tends to be lymphadenopathy, and it's almost always in young people. Yes, can old people get lymphomas? That's absolutely true, they can, right? But it's almost always in a young person, right? And then, in addition to being in a young person, they usually also tend to have, like, chronic B symptoms. So, they'll say, like, over the last, like, X number of weeks, or X number of months, this person has been having like fevers, some mild weight loss, although they usually don't have weight loss, but you know, fevers, night sweats, and the like. So that's the way you tell a leukemia, apart from a lymphoma, in a Q step, right? Because the MBME, they're usually pretty good at writing these questions well enough to where it's kind of hard to differentiate them. So pay attention to these heart signs that I'm describing to you right now. And then, in the leukemia world, there's this algorithm I use. So once you've determined that, okay, I'm likely dealing with a leukemia, right? There's an algorithm I typically use to say, okay, this is how I know the specific kind of leukemia they are asking about, right? So I look at the two extremes of life. I look at old people and young people. Or, you know, let's start with like young people first. You know, the young come first, right? So like young people, right? And then we then have old people, right? So young people, remember A comes before C in the alphabet. So the young people will have ALL, okay? And then the old people have CLL, right? Those people are usually at the extremes of age. So super young people like kids, 5 years old, 6 year olds, they get ALL. And then, you know, old people like in their late 60s, 70s, 80s, they tend to have CLL, right? And then in the middle of life, right, we have the MLs, ML for midlife, right? So we have AML and CML, right? That's the first thing, right? So now, what are some unique things you want to know about each of those things that, you know, they will usually give it as a memory hook in the question that will tell you, okay, you are dealing with this versus the other. Again, like I said, ALL is going to be in a kid, right? So if you see an adult is not going to get ALL on an MBM exam. That's pretty much a given, right? And then remember that ALL has an association with Down syndrome, okay? ALL has an association with Down syndrome, right? You've probably heard of this mnemonic that they all fall down. To help you remember that ALL is found in people with Down syndrome. And then if you look at the other extreme of age, CLL, right? And ALL is rapidly fatal if it's not treated. Usually those kids can be dead in like weeks or something like that if you don't treat them quickly. And then CLL, the classic presentation will be an old person with recurrent infections, right? And they will have a super high white count. So you may say, oh, Divine, this person has a super high white count. How are they getting recurrent infections? The thing is, CLL in and of itself is an immunodeficiency disease. Because the thing is, yes, you may have all those ferocious B cells running all over the place. But the thing is, those B cells essentially do not work. So they may not make like a decent number of antibodies. Or if they make antibodies, those antibodies will effectively not work. Okay? So that's how you know that, okay, you're likely, that's why those people tend to get recurrent infections, right? So again, CLL, they really high white count, right? Tons of infections, and it's usually like pneumonia and all this stuff with like strep pneumo, right? They'll have a crazy high white count. It'll be an old person, right? And remember, if you look at the person's blood smear, you're gonna find smudge cells, okay? You're gonna find smudge cells. If they, one thing I guess maybe I should maybe go ahead and throw out there is, it's a B cell problem, right? So the bug pattern, since I'm almost discussing it as an immunodeficiency disorder, will be practically bacterial infections, okay? So that's the big thing. And then AML, obviously, right? AML, you need to know the genetic translocation. It's 1517, right? It's a 1517 translocation, and you treat it with all transretinoic acid, right? And obviously, if you're looking at the cells on the histology, you're gonna see ROTs, right? And ROTs, you need to be extremely careful when you're kind of manipulating those things, because those people can absolutely get DIC. Those ROTs are very powerful triggers of secondary hemostasis. So those people can run into DIC with that, right? And then CML, the thing is, one thing your friends at the MMA can do is, instead of putting all transretinoic acid as an answer for the treatment of AML, right? One thing they can do is they can put vitamin A derivative as an answer, right? So that's something you need to be careful about, right? Because the MBME, one of their most common stocks in trade is to essentially take what you know and just give it different words, okay? So instead of putting all transretinoic acid, they can put vitamin A derivative, right? So don't fall for that on a test so that you don't get gimped. And then CML, right? I mean, I feel like anyone that has taken step one or has been in med school for any length of time knows a decent amount about CML, right? So CML, classic thing will be the 922 translocation, right? That's a big one to know. And then remember, you create a fusion protein known as BCR-ABL, right? AKA the Philadelphia chromosome. So the Philadelphia chromosome gives rise to that BCR-ABL fusion protein. And you treat this with imatinib, okay? You treat it with imatinib. Imatinib is a tyrosine kinase inhibitor. I'm pretty certain I've given this rule in maybe like a video or podcast I've granted where I said that if a person has if a drug ends in nib, that tells you right off the bat that that drug has to be a tyrosine kinase inhibitor. So that's a very high yield thing to know for purposes of exams. Okay, that's a very high yield thing to know for purposes of exams. So that's the way you tell those different leukemias apart, right? So the lymphomas, I mean, the big thing with lymphomas is you want to think about the two big classes, right? So again, Hodgkin's versus non-Hodgkin's, right? So what are the big things to keep in mind with Hodgkin's, right? Obviously, if a person has Hodgkin's lymphoma, again, they will have, again, primarily lymph nodes that will be affected. They usually will not have CBC abnormalities. It's usually going to be in a young person. Again, these things are not always true, but they're true the vast majority of the time on MBMEs, right? And they will have chronic B symptoms, right? And remember, the highlight cell for Hodgkin's lymphoma are the Reed-Sternberg cells, right? The Reed-Sternberg cells are the classic cells for Hodgkin's lymphoma. And one thing that the MBME loves to do, especially on step three, and they also do this on step one, is to make your, well, hopefully, hope that you remember that Hodgkin's lymphoma is almost like a nice representation of the biostatistical concept of bimodality, right? So it tends to show up in young folk, right? So, you know, like late teenagers or like, you know, like their early 20s. And then it also tends to show up in old people, right? So people that are, you know, almost 60 years old or a little over 60 years old, right? So it's a bimodal distribution, right? And then don't forget, again, your Reed-Sternberg cells. I forgot to mention with CLL. CLL, the classic cell you think about are your smudge cells. I think I may have mentioned it, but I don't know why my mind is saying I didn't say it. So I'm just saying it just in case, right? And then, again, Reed-Sternberg cells versus non-Hodgkin's, you know, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. There's many different types. You do not see the Reed-Sternberg cells. And pretty much most of these leukemias and lymphomas just involve B cells for the most part, right? And remember, your different kinds of Hodgkin's lymphomas. I will just tell you this because there's many different types. The one I just feel like there is like two key principles you want to, or let's say three key principles you want to keep in mind with Hodgkin's lymphomas. Because again, there are many types. You don't need to memorize everything about every type, but there's like one unique thing you want to make sure you know about pretty much all of them, about these Hodgkin's lymphomas. The first thing is you want to know that if you have more lymphocytes in a Hodgkin's lymphoma, the prognosis is better, okay? If you have, I'll say that again, if you have more lymphocytes in a Hodgkin's lymphoma, the prognosis is better, okay? Now, the corollary to that is if you have fewer lymphocytes, then the prognosis is worse, right? So there are two, there's this kind of Hodgkin's lymphoma that's called like lymphocyte predominant. Sometimes people call it lymphocyte rich. And then there's another one that they call lymphocyte depleted. By virtue of this principle I just discussed, lymphocyte rich Hodgkin's lymphoma has a much better, in fact, I'm fairly certain it has the best prognosis of all the, prognosis is the wrong word, prognosis. It has the best prognosis of all the Hodgkin's lymphomas compared to the compared to all the others, and certainly a lot better than the lymphocyte depleted. And then if they give you like a stock question on an NBM exam and they're asking you about the kind of Hodgkin's lymphoma the person has, go with the nodular sclerosing variant, okay? The most common kind of Hodgkin's lymphoma, very high yield. The most common kind of Hodgkin's lymphoma is the nodular sclerosing kind of Hodgkin's lymphoma. And then if you see a person with Hodgkin's lymphoma having a lot of pruritus, and they tell you that, oh, this, the, you look at the person's CBC and you notice that, oh, the eosinophil count is like really high, it's like 6% or 10% or something like that, then you absolutely want to think about the mixed cellularity variant, okay? So the things that are released by those eosinophils can cause a pruritus, although other kinds of Hodgkin's lymphomas can be associated with pruritus. And don't forget that your Hodgkin's lymphomas, right, classically, they are CD15 and CD30 positive. Just remember CD15 and then double that number, you get CD30 and you're good to go on your test, right? Some of the non-Hodgkin's lymphomas I think I should maybe talk about, right? Don't forget your Burkitt's lymphoma, starry sky pattern, right? 814 translocation, right? Basically, you have like a c-MYC amplification, and c-MYC promotes like just crazy proliferation of lymphocytes, right? So starry sky pattern, jaw mass in an African, abdominal mass in a person that is not African, right? 814 translocation, c-MYC amplification, that's a very high yield thing to keep at the back of your mind for exams. And then multiple myeloma, right? Again, it's something I've talked about ad nauseum in many podcasts. Again, don't screw this up on a test. These people will have crap symptoms, right? They'll have hypercalcemia, they'll have renal problems, they'll have anemia, and they'll have bone pain. They'll have lytic lesions. This is one of those things that causes lytic lesions on imaging, okay? Lytic lesions. It's a radiological term, okay? So Hodgkin's lymphoma, again, multiple myeloma, keep that at the back of your mind. It's very easy to identify it, right? You do like your SPEP and your UPEP to make the correct diagnosis, right? And then don't forget that on a blood smear, right, you'll see like a stack of coins formation of red blood cells. That's what's classically known as the rouleau formation. And then I know that I talked about CML. CML is actually one of those things called a myeloproliferative disorder. CML is a myeloproliferative disorder. Please do not forget your other myeloproliferative disorders, right? They love to test those things on NBM exams, right? Like CML is a classic one there. One other one you want to keep at the back of your mind is polycythemia vera, right? For the most part, these myeloproliferative disorders, they tend to be associated with like JAK2 mutations, right? So polycythemia vera, these people have like a crazy high white blood cell count. A crazy high hematocrit, right? So you see these people with hemoglobins of like 20, hematocrit of like 65%, right? You're like, that doesn't seem very normal, right? And usually these people have like, they'll have this thing called like aquagenic pruritus, right? So, you know, they take a hot shower and they itch like crazy, right? If you see that, think about polycythemia vera. And another thing is, Another thing you may see on an MBM exam is these people may actually have like facial plethora. So their faces are like super, super, super red. If you see that, yeah, definitely think about polycythemia vera. And the thing is, because they have so many red blood cells, there's almost like a feedback inhibition of the production of EPO. So their levels of EPO are actually pretty low, right? So because these people have such high red blood cell counts, you know, you try to bleed them out, right? So phlebotomy is like the primary treatment. You can also give these people like hydroxyurea. Remember, that's a ribonucleotide reductase inhibitor that can help there. And then another one you may see, another myeloproliferative disorder you may see is like essential thrombocythemia, right? The big thing is these people have like a crazy high platelet count, crazy high number of like megakaryocytes. I've actually seen this in the real world. You know, it's kind of rare, but it's pretty striking when you see it, right? So these people, you may think that, oh, because they have a crazy high number of platelets, they are just going to have thrombosis. No, they're also going to have a pretty large bleeding risk, okay? They're going to have a pretty large bleeding risk. And again, it's associated with JAK2 mutations. And again, the key thing you absolutely want to keep in mind with these things is these people have, again, a super high platelet count. So they have a high risk of forming clot, but they also have a high risk of bleeding because, again, many of those platelets do not work right. And then another classic myeloproliferative neoplasm you may see is something called primary myelofibrosis, right? For the most part, there's just something weird that happens with fibroblasts, and they essentially just obliterate the bone marrow, right? So basically, you have like those teardrop-shaped red blood cells. If you do a bone marrow biopsy or whatever, you get like a dry tap. That's like a classic thing they love to test on exams, right? So again, other than CML that has the 922 translocation, Philadelphia chromosome, BCR-ABL, the other myeloproliferative disorders, right, like essential thrombocythemia, primary myelofibrosis, and polycythemia vera are associated with mutations in JAK2, okay? They are associated with mutations in JAK2. Again, that's very high yield to know. And then one thing I want to talk about is like hairy cell leukemia. It's just something that tends to pop up on exams, right? Remember, the classic thing you want to keep in mind is you'll see a person's lymphocytes, and those lymphocytes seem to have like these fine white projections. If you see that like thready long projections from the lymphocytes, don't confuse this with a smudge cell. Smudge cell is CLL, okay? But hairy cell leukemia, again, lymphocytes with like, you know, like long, like stringy projections coming from it. Look up a picture of this. This is actually a good histology image to be able to identify on an MBM exam. And don't forget that it's positive for something known as TRAP, okay? Tartrate resistant acid phosphatase, okay? So it's TRAP. So TRAP, so tartrate resistant acid phosphatase, right? And then one other bizarre thing that I want you to keep in mind with these leukemias, lymphomas, please do not confuse myeloproliferative disorders with something called a myelodysplastic syndrome, okay? Please do not confuse it with something called a myelodysplastic syndrome, okay? The thing is, myelodysplastic syndromes, you know, if you've had like chemo before, or you've gotten radiation therapy, or you've been exposed to benzene, all these things are bad because they can become like AML. But basically, I'll tell you this, there are two critical things you want to keep. Again, you may say, Devon, you're going all basic science on me here. I promise you, I'm not willingly going all basic science on you. This stuff I'm talking about is super high yield to know for exams, like literally for step two and literally for step three. You don't need to believe me, but I know what I'm talking about. I promise you, right? So the thing is, what are the two things you need to know with myelodysplastic syndromes? Myelodysplastic syndromes, the first thing you want to keep in mind is there is something called the pseudo-Pelger-Hewitt anomaly, right? So the Hewitt, I don't know if it's Hewitt or Hewitt or whatever, but for the most part, it's H-U-E-T, okay? Basically, I think of it as a neutrophil wearing glasses, right? So you see like a neutrophil that almost looks like a Reed-Sternberg cell, right? Like a neutrophil that has like a bilobed nucleus. If you see that, think about the pseudo-Pelger-Hewitt anomaly. In fact, these myelodysplastic syndromes, they are said to be associated with hypo-segmented neutrophils, not hyper-segmented. Hyper-segmented neutrophils, you're thinking of like a B12 or folate deficiency or megaloblastic anemia. But if you see like neutrophils and the MBM tells you that they are hypo-segmented, you absolutely want to think about the myelodysplastic syndromes. And then one other thing you may see with the myelodysplastic syndromes is something called a sideroblastic anemia, right? Sorry, like a ringed sideroblast. So a ringed sideroblast does not always mean, oh, I'm just dealing with sideroblastic anemia. Does not always mean, oh, I'm just dealing with lead poisoning. No. You can also find a ringed sideroblast in amyelodysplastic syndrome. Again, I promise you, these things I'm saying, some of you are going to get this on an exam. I'm going to remember that you heard it in this podcast. So I think those are kind of like the big things I want to say with these leukemias and lymphomas. But, you know, I kind of wanted to review them really well. Just again, quick highlight for step 2, CK, step 3. And hopefully you'll find this to be, helpful. So I'm going to go ahead and, I guess maybe, you know, let me kind of end this with these translocations, right? Just to kind of wrap them up, right? So 814, right, is Burkitt's lymphoma. I've talked about that. 922 is CML. I've talked about that. 1517 is AML, right? That's acute promyelocytic leukemia. 1418 is another weird one known as like follicular lymphoma. And then there's one bizarre one, 1122, but it's not a hematologic malignancy. It's more like Ewing sarcoma, right? It's more like Ewing's sarcoma, right? So, so I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. Like I said, this podcast will be short. As I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring and also large group tutoring for a ton of exams, right? So step 1, step 2 CK, step 2 CS, step 3, preclinical med school exams, third year shelf exams. If you're a college student and you need tutoring for the MCAT, for general chemistry, organic chemistry, physics, biochemistry, histology, physiology, I tutor for all those things, right? And then if you're a medicine resident and you need tutoring for the ABIM board exam or the internal medicine in training exam, I do offer, again, one-on-one tutoring for that. And then I offer these booster courses. It's like 10 hours for step 2 CK, step 3. It's 20 hours for step 1. Basically, I review the must-knows that you need for those different tests. I review those must-knows for those exams. And then it's something that if you're like, you know, close to the end of your dedicated period or you just want to kind of like put everything together relatively quickly, that's something you're always welcome to reach out to me for. And then I feel like if you're also, you know, like a med student applying to residency, so like an ERASAP, or a college student applying to like med school, so like an AMCAS application, again, I do offer like one-on-one coaching, right? So like personal statement editing, application editing, rec letters, mock interviews. Again, I've worked with pretty large number of people applying to like a pretty large number of residency programs. I kind of know what these residencies kind of look out for. So again, most of the people I've worked with, they've pretty much all matched at their first choices. So again, if that's something you're interested in, do feel free to reach out to me and I'll be more than happy to point you in the right direction. And then the final thing I guess I will say is, so I'm offering some large group USMLE courses, but I'll need like 5 to 7 people. So if you're a group and you need tutoring, it'll probably be like over a 2 or 3 week span. We pretty much go over everything you need, either for step 1 or step 2 CK or step 3. If you find a group and you find a location, just let me know. And then reach out to me either through the website or you send me an email, divineinterventionpodcasts@gmail.com. And then we can kind of take things from there. You know, it's a fairly complicated process, but actually it's not complicated. It's pretty straightforward. You just let me know and then we can set things up. So have a wonderful rest of your day. I hope you find this podcast to be helpful. This is one of those podcasts that are short but powerful. They're very high for your exam. So please listen to this stuff before you take any of your USMLE exams or any of your COMLEX exams. Okay, so I'll see you next time in episode 204, I guess. So have a wonderful rest of your day. God bless you. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel. Just search for Divine Intervention USMLE. You'll find the YouTube channel. Please feel free to subscribe. And also, I have all this on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and also my WordPress website. So, you know, please subscribe to all these things. Any positive reviews or negative reviews you leave helps. That's the way I improve. And again, like I said, if there is any specific podcast you want me to make, you can either, you know, shoot me a comment on Reddit or something. I think I'm pretty visible on Reddit, or, you know, just send me an email and I'll be happy to, again, if it's a reasonable request and I have the time, like really, probably the biggest logjam on my time is just probably one of the bigger impediments to me not making podcasts is just time. If I had more time, I'd make a lot more podcasts, but unfortunately, I also have many other life commitments. So have a wonderful rest of your day. I'll see you next time. Time to stop blabbing. Good night. God bless you.